Yesterday we had a long discussion about the Mahadran, Mina Mahadran, and the Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai here on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. And we began to study yesterday the Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil B'Mahadran Mina Mahadran. And the Ri in Tosfos says that you can't have what I call your cake and eat it too. You can't have both the Mahadran and the Mahadran Mina Mahadran. The Mahadran means that the number of candles that you light reflects the number of people in the household. The Mahadran Mina Mahadran means that the number of candles that you light reflect the days of Hanukkah. And Tosfos introduces here a critical word, a concept called Hekera, which means that the person who walks by and looks at your candles, he's going to have to understand the message of those candles, meaning the message of the multiple candles. Now, he's going to be confused because he has no way of knowing whether or not the number of candles that he's looking at reflects the number of people in the house, which is called the Mahadran, or the number of days of Hanukkah that we're up to, which is Mahadran Mina Mahadran. So take, for example, we mentioned the case where on the fifth night of Hanukkah, he has five people in his household. And if he lights five candles, what is he achieving here? Is he achieving the Mahadran? Is he achieving the Mahadran Mina Mahadran? Does the passerby realize that there are five people in his household? Or is he confused and he thinks there are 5 days of Hanukkah? In the language of Tosfos, he writes, that the issue of Mahadran and Mahadran goes back to the Ikar mitzvah of one candle. Okay, so you're lighting one candle no matter how many people there are in the household, and now you can increase the number of candles that reflect the number of days of Hanukkah. And what we're skipping over completely here in the Mahadran and Mahadran is Mahadran. The whole enterprise of Mahadran is going to have to give way, is going to have to kowtow to the Mahadran and Mahadran. You can't have both. And therefore, Yesh Yoser Hidur, there's more of a Hidur here in the Mahadran Mina Mahadran, the Ika Hekera, because it's obvious to the onlooker that Kishemosif Aholich, that's according to Beis Hillel or Machaser, or he goes down in number, according to Beit Shammai, Shukineged Yomim Anichnosim or Ayotzim, that's Yomim Anichnosim according to Beit Shammai, Yomim Ayotzim according to Beis Hillel. Avol im Oseh Ner L'chol Echad, if he's going to try to be Mekayim the Mahadran, which means Ner L'chol Echad, then he's going to undermine the Mahadran Mina Mahadran. Why? Because Afil Yosef Mikan V'Elech, even though the numbers are going up, Leka Hakera, the person who is walking by and he looks at the multiple candles, he doesn't know that you're adding candles because it reflects the day of Hanukkah and the increase in the miracle. Yisburu, he's of the opinion, Shekach Yesh B'nei Adam Abayis, he thinks that that's just reflecting the number of people in the house. And it sounds to me, I don't know if I'm right, that the Ri in Tosfos is assuming that the onlooker on one day is not necessarily the onlooker on the other day. Because if you assume it's the same Joe who's passing by on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of Chanukah each day, then he sees an increase in the candles, it would seem, again, I'm just throwing out a possibility, you could fight with me if you like, but it would seem very logical that he would understand that the increase in the number of candles reflects the days of Yom Nechnosim Yom HaYotzim. Again, he might be perplexed. Maybe they added new people into the household. You know, they had new children, or they, you know, their children came from yeshiva, from the dorm, they came back to roost at home. But leaving out that possibility, so that's why I'm suggesting that according to the Ri, the person who walks by, he's not necessarily aware of the progression from one day to the other. So he sees X number of candles in the window, in the Pesach Beisav Bachutz, and now he's got to think in his mind what is the number of candles. So he's going to come to the conclusion that this reflects the number of days of Chanukah, and hence I achieve the Mahajra Mina Mahajra. However, if already on the first day, you know, you're trying to be Mekayim the Mahadrin and you want to get Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad, so then at that point you're just undermining the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, because the onlooker is going to think that the number of candles here reflects the Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad. Now, it sounds to me like the Ri is saying that you have to commit yourself one way or the other. Either commit yourself to the Mahadrin, and then the number of candles will be determined by the number of people in your household, or commit yourself to the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin and add candles that reflect the number of days. You can't have both, as we said before, because if you're going to add candles and try to achieve the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin when you've already committed yourself, so to speak, to the Mahadrin, Then we have the Svara of the Ri, who says, Yisparu Shekach Yesh B'nei Odom B'Bayis. In other words, once he started a pattern of Mahadrin, and he wants to add candles for each one of... Now, Rav Osai, where are these candles being lit? Okay, outside. But I meant to ask a different question. If, let's say, you're trying to achieve the Mahadrin, Where are these candles being lit? Are they being lit all together in one place? Like, for example, our minhag is to light a Chanukiah. So you can theoretically, you can put one Chanukiah here, and one Chanukiah here, and one here, you know, different parts of the chatzer, or in different windows of the house, or whatever it might be. And therefore, the onlooker will certainly see that there are X number of people in the household, and will be able to count them by separating one from the other. The Rambam, on the other hand, seems to assume that one person is lighting on behalf of everyone. Now, if one person is the appointed representative who's lighting on behalf of everyone, so you might be tempted to assume, again, this is not certainly not definitely so, that he's lighting all the candles together in one place. Alternatively, maybe he's lighting candles for one member of the household here, and another set of candles here, another set of candles here. So the Rambam writes that if on the first night he wants to be Mekayim the Mahadrin, and he has 10 people in his house, then he should light 10 candles. Then the Rambam writes, on the eighth night, he's going to light 80 candles. Okay, I don't have a Rambam here in front of me. I don't know if Mitch, you have your Rambam with you. That would be great. So I don't have to read this, you know, I don't have to tell this over to you by heart from memory, but we can read it inside.
Sounds like a waste of candles.
On the contrary, from the fact that the Rambam wants 80 candles, what do you see that the Rambam is achieving, Rabbi Osai? Both what? The Mahadrin and the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. He doesn't have 80 people in the household. The Rambam was talking about a Metzius where he has 10 people in the household. So I understand very well that on the first night, he's lighting 10 candles because he has 10 people in the household. He wants to be Mekayim the Mahadrin. Then he gets to the second night. He's going to light how many candles on the second night?
20.
So you see that the Rambam is advocating for filling both the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. And therefore, the Rambam is against the Ri. Because the reason is you can't have your cake and eat it too. And therefore, if you're going to increase the number of candles, then the onlooker is mistakenly going to think, since you started with 10 candles on the first night and you're already established a pattern of Mahadrin, meaning that the number of candles reflect the number of people in the household, that's Mahadrin. Then, when you increase the number of candles the next night, because on the second night you want to be Mekayim of the Mitzvah Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, then you're in trouble as far as Hekeir is concerned, says the Ri, because the spectator is going to think that the extra number of candles... So again, the Rambam gives a pretty way out case. We have 10 people in the household. Baruch Hashem, that's what we call Bruchat Yeladim. You know, it's a big family. But let's say you only have 2 or 3 people in the family. And then on the second night, you're going to double it. So you went up from 3 candles to 6 candles. The onlooker, says the Ri, is going to mistakenly think that there's 6 people in the household. Therefore, the Ri says, you got to decide what you're going to do. If you want to do the Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, you have to drop the Mahadrin. And then you're going to create a very definite pattern, let's say according to Beis Hillel, in which you go from 1 candle to 2 candles to 3 candles, and there's no question in anyone's mind that you're being Mekayim Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, Keneged Yomim Hayotzin. But if, on the other hand, you're going to try to chaperite both, and you're going to have to, and you're going to want to be mekayim both ma'ajin and ma'ajin min ma'ajin, so on the first night you're lighting three candles, and the second night you're lighting six candles, then you've lost the hekera of ma'ajin min ma'ajin, because the onlooker is going to think that you're being mekayim the ma'ajin. So therefore the Ri has to ask the following question. Well, if it's an either or situation, then which takes precedence? You know, I come to the Rav and I say, Rabbi, what should I do? I have a choice. I can either do the Mahajrin or I can do the Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin. What would have been my, at least my gut response? I would have said Mahajrin. Because there's a pyramid here. You know, you want to be a Mahadras HaMitzvah, this is what we're advocating in the Brisa. If you want to go beyond that, and you want to get to the cherry on top of the ice cream, so then do Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin.
Only if you can maintain it. Because you said we can do one night, one
right,
night.
So let's assume like the Rambam Shita, right? No. Again, Phil, what I wanted to say was, if we assume like the Bali Atosvis, that it's an either or situation, now I come to the Rav and I say, well, I have two paths to go on. Which should I choose? Where's the adifus, the priority? Should the priority be the Mahajrin or the Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin? So my gut reaction would have been, if not for Tosvis, that at least do the Mahajrin. You know, you want to go super duper, but first do the first level of Mahajrin. But Tosfos says no, that there's more of a Hidur in the Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin. We don't understand two things. We have to answer two questions according to Tosfos. Number one, why is Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin a greater Kiyum than Mahajrin? Why is the Hekera of Keneged Ayamim greater than the Keneged, than the Mispar Anshei Abayis? That's question number one. And question number two is, if you grant Tosfos' assumption that Mahajrin and Mahajrin takes precedence, then why did the Brice even bother with the Mahajrin? Unless you assume that according to the Ri, at least on the first night of Hanukkah, you could achieve Mahajrin. But this becomes very odd. Because if you're going to assume that on the first night he's going to light multiple candles, that's going to reflect the anshe abayis ne'eluchol echad v'echad, then when it comes to the second night, so then what's going to happen on the second night? He certainly is right. So according to the Ri, if Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin is greater than Mahajrin, so on the second night he certainly is going to choose, because it's an either or situation. Because on the first night, yeah. But again, how important is it from the perspective of Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin that the first night have one candle and one candle only? If you assume that that's critical in order to fulfill the Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin, but it doesn't make sense, because on the first night, what's the difference between Neri Shubeso and Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin? Is there any difference? They're identical, right? Because it's one candle. So it would seem to me, therefore logically, that on the first night there's no Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin. No, if there's no Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin, then the conflict that the Ri supposes doesn't exist. Because there's only one possibility, namely Mahajrin. There's no Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin. And therefore it would make sense that if there's no conflict, and that's what the Brisa means, you should be Mekayim Mahajrin. Again, Tzorich Iyun Gadol. I'm saying what's very difficult here, according to the Ri, is why does the Brisa present this entire enterprise, as I call it, of Mahajrin? If Mahajrin Min Mahajrin will trump Mahajrin, then leave out Mahajrin. So I wanted to answer that perhaps Mahajrin still becomes relevant, even according to the Ri, on which night? On the first night. Why? Because on the first night you don't have Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin, correct? Because there's no difference between Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin and their Ishu Beso.
There's Beis Shammai. You're holding only like
let's go according to Beis Hill first. So then according to Beis Hill, at least, I could say that on the first night, since there's no conflict between Mahajrin and Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin, let him take advantage of the Mahajrin. And that's why the Brisa mentions Mahajrin. But that's very difficult to say that the only reason why the Brisa mentioned Mahajrin is only for the first night. But now let's go over to the Shittas HaRambam. The Rambam says that you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have Mahajrin and have Mahajrin Mina Mahajrin. Do we have that, Mitch?
Yeah.
Do you want to read it to me, or you want me to read it? Whichever way, I don't care.
Okay.
Go ahead, you have the Rambam, so you read it.
Kamaneros Madlik Hanukkah, Mitzvah Shem Yekol Vais Madlik Ner Echad
So it doesn't matter how many people in the household, the Ikra Mitzvah is to light one candle. So the Rambam is integrating both Mahajan and Mahajan Mina Mahajan, which again, that makes us very happy campers, because that's a simple pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara is saying if you only want to do the Mahajan, so you're going to light 10 candles, and that's going to be 10 candles standard from the first night to the last night, because that's how many people live in your house. Oh, you want to go beyond that? I'll give you an option of adding to the Mahajan, Mahajan Mina Mahajan, so the 10 candles becomes 20 candles, etc., etc. Again, the Rambam seems to disqualify the argument of the Ri, meaning we're not worried about the onlooker that he might be in certain scenarios perplexed because he doesn't see that the number of neros reflects the number of days. Forget about Hekera. In other words, according to the Rambam, the din of Mahadrin and Mahajan Mina Mahajan is in the Neros themselves. Forget about the onlooker. Forget about the Hekera concept. So in terms of the Neros themselves, the Neros and the number of Neros represent, number one, reflect the number of people in the household. Number two, they reflect the number of days of Hanukkah. And that's enough to achieve both Mahajan and Mahajan Mina Mahajan. And by the way, is there anyone here in this room who would be willing to volunteer to raise his hand as an affirmative, in the affirmative, that's his minhag? Two people? Three people? We're doing a little bit better. Only three people follow the minhag of the Rambam? So how many candles do you light in your house, I'd like to know, Phil? Am I being too personal here?
No.
Too invasive?
We light the number of lights.
And it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's all you light?
No. Actually, each person lights their own candle.
Oh, so at the end, if there are 10 people in your house, how many candles are you going to light on the eighth day? 80 candles. So we, again, I'm going to speak on behalf of everyone here in this room, unless you're a Sfaradim, we follow the Shitas HaRama. The Sfaradim follow the Shitas HaTosvis. And the minhag of the Sfaradim, which will open up the Shulchan Aruch, believe that, is to light only Keneged Ayomim. But we're going to drop the Mahadrin of Keneged Ishu Beso. So here's the paradox in halachic terms, meaning, generally speaking, the Rambam and Tosfos represent two schools of thought. The Sephardic school of thought, and the Sfaradim will follow the Rambam Shita, and the Ashkenazic school of thought will follow the Balei HaTosfos, who are in Ashkenazic countries, in Germany and France and so forth. Here, everything is to the reverse. Okay. Listen to what happened. This is a very, historically, in terms of the history of halacha, this is a very big, what's the word I'm looking
tumult.
For? What?
Tumult.
Tumult, no, I meant to say
revolution?
It's a, not a revolution, what's the word? An anomaly. Okay, that's the word I was looking for. It's an anomaly. Here's a case where we have machlokas between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos. The Ashkenazim follow the Rambam Shita, that's the minhag in Ashkenaz, and the Sfaradim follow the Shitas HaTosfos, and that's an anomaly. There's no questions. I'm not asking any kashas over here. I'm just pointing out that in the history of halacha, it's a very strange phenomenon. It doesn't usually go that way. Generally speaking, it would have been that we should follow the Shitas HaTosfos, and the Ri says in Tosfos, and he doesn't even quote another opinion, that you've got a choice between Mahajan and Mahajan Mina Mahajan. And he seems to imply that the Mahajan Mina Mahajan is even a greater kiyu, to reflect the number of days. And therefore, on the first night, you're going to start with one candle. On the second night, you're going to end with eight candles and gandik. And that's the Maisa. So, as Shlomo says before, you want to be stingy on candles and you want to follow the Shitas HaTosfos. Whereas those who do not follow the Shitas HaTosfos, which is our minhag in the Bnei Ashkenaz, we're going to follow the Shitas HaRambam. So we become Rambamites for the first time in history.
The Rambam himself brings down the Shita of Sfart Milim Nagei Sfart.
Right. And who does and the bidding of Anshei Sfarad is to follow the Shita Tosfos, am I right?
Yeah, it says
So the Rambam tells you, he records the history that the Bnei Sfarad followed the Shita. He doesn't spell out that it's the Shita Tosfos, but we know that it is. And they will light the maximum of 8 candles on the 8th night. So in other words, the Mahajim in Mahajim is going to be fulfilled, but we're going to drop the ball on what? On the Mahajim, because we can't have both.
The whole idea of Hanukkah and lighting the candles is presumed Anissa. Just as people should know, and on the outside, walking past, about the miracle of Hanukkah. What difference does it make to them how many candles there are? Oh. It shouldn't be concerned.
So there are two elements of Hidur here. Why does the Pirsum HaNes get jacked up on a higher level? And there are two answers to that question. One answer to the question is how many people were impacted by this miracle? How many people are declaring to the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, you intervened in history in order to save me? There's a second element of Hidur. And that is, did the miracle last for one day, for 2 days, for 3 days? How great was the miracle itself? So in the first case, we're talking about the salvation of the Jewish people, and that's what we're commemorating. The salvation of the Jewish people is that much greater if each household represents how many people live in that household. And the second Hidur HaMitzvah, to expand your Pirsum HaNes, is how great was the miracle itself? The miracle was not just one day, it was 2 days, etc., etc. Now, if you ask me which of those two approaches are superior, I don't know. Why not do both? And that's exactly the Rambam Shita. And here, paradoxically, the Sfaradim accepted the approach of Tosfos that you can't have both. Why? Because it has to be clear to the onlooker what the number of candles represent. You can't say that the onlooker, the spectator, will understand that the number of candles reflects both the number of members of the household and the expansion of the miracle from one day to the next day to the next day. So he's going to come to a mistaken conclusion. Therefore, you have to choose it. And that was the minhag in Sfarad. And therefore, the minhag in Sfarad said, if you have to choose, you're going to choose keneged yom ha-nichnosim, Yotzin technically, because we paskin like Beis Hillel, and therefore you're going to light the maximum of 8 candles on the 8th night. Drop the extra candles that reflect the Mahadrin of Ner L'chol Echad V'yach. Now there's another nafkamina here between the Rambam and other Rishonim. The Rambam consistently speaks about the Madlik, and the Rambam addresses the following question: how many candles should the Madlik be lighted? And his shita is, the Rambam, that he should be lighting, if there are 10 B'nai Abayis, 10 candles on the first night, and then he goes on to 20 on the second night till he reaches 8. There's only one person being madlik. The Ramah has a different take on this whole sugya. The Ramah wants every single person to be lighting for himself. Here, we're very consistent. The Sfaradim follow the Rambam, and the Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. The Ramah is based on the Rosh who came way before him, that each person should be lighting his own candle. So it works like this. Let's take, for example, the Mahadran. Here it's much simpler. The Mahadran is Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad. The Rambam understood Ner L'chol Echad means Bishvil Kol Echad V'Echad. The Ramah understood that Ner L'chol Echad means Shekol Echad V'Echad Yevarech V'Yad. So it means that according to the Rambam Shita, the act of Hadlaka is one person is implementing the act of Hadlaka, and the number of candles that he's lit should reflect the number of Anshei Habayis. He's making a declaration how many people in this house were impacted by the Ness of Chan. The Rambam, on the other hand, holds that when one person lights on behalf of the house, that's called Shlichus. But we have a Hidur, and we're not going to accept Shlichus. We're going to say Mitzvah Bo Yoser Mi Bishlucha. If we apply the principle of Mitzvah Bo Yoser Bishlucha, we want every single person physically, bodily, to be involved in the Maisa Hadlaka. And therefore, I'm not going to light for you, you're going to light for yourself. And this is reminiscent of other mitzvahs, like for example, the Tilus Lulav. If I can't take the Lulav for you, you have to take it for yourself. Or Sfiris Omer. I can't count the Omer for you, you have to count the Omer for yourself. And that's what the Hidur Mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, even though the Ikar HaMitzvah is Ner Ish Ubeso. We already studied Rashi that one person is lighting on behalf of the entire household, which means that we're implementing the principle, the universal principle of Shluchos Shalom from us. But the Mahadrin, according to the Ramaz Pshat, is Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad, means Kol Echad V'Echad Yadlik Li'atzmo. Forget about Shlichus. I'm not going to appoint a proxy. I want to be personally involved in Hadlokas. In Hadlokas Ner Chai. Yes. So, but speak a little loud if you can.
Yeah. So when the kids and our grandchildren were at the house, they each lit their own. Okay? But I always lit for myself and my wife together, one candle going up.
Right.
So is that a mixture of the two, or is it wrong?
No. The Taz, very strange Taz. The Taz says that there's a principle called Ishto Kigufo. And even though normally shlichus would apply from one person to the other, which means the only way that one person could do an action and the halacha could relate that action to another person is through the channel, through the mechanism of shlichus, the exception to the rule is isha, is a person's wife. Ishto kigufa, the pasuk says, v'hayu lebasar echad. In that context, it's not shlichus. It's almost as if the two bodies merge into one. Last night I had a shir on Peleoetz, which is a great Musa sefer. So once a week we learn Peleoetz. So yesterday, the topic for Peleoetz, I didn't write the script, so don't blame me, is Avas Ish Le'ishto, the love of a man for a woman. That was the topic of last night's discussion. And everything in that discussion has to be seen in the context of this principle called Ishto Kegufo. The Rambam says he has to love her the same way he loves his own goof. And the Peleoid says he has to be mechavid her even more than he would mechavid himself. So if he has X number of money and he can either spend it on himself to buy another suit or another tie, or he can spend it for his wife, he should spend it for his wife. In that sense, the Avas Ish L'Ishto extends even beyond himself. So therefore, the Taz says that I don't need to become a shliach for my wife. She's not appointing me as a proxy, as an agent who's substituting for her. She and I are one goof. And that's called Ishto Kigufo. So I don't think, Jerry, that you're violating the principle of Ne'el L'chol Echad V'Echad the way the Rambam understands it. Eino Chinami, everyone should be lighting their own, but according to the Taz, in the case of an Isha, there's no need for her to light her own candles. Now, the Taz is not very popular in our society. You know, it's not politically correct, because the women want to feel, they want to do more mitzvahs and more mitzvahs. And this is what my friends who are in Rabbonis in America are facing on a daily basis. Every Muntik and Darnishtik, the women come forward with another mitzvah that they want to fulfill. And it's not enough that they do this mitzvah. The halacha didn't give them enough opportunities for mitzvahs they wanted. I can go on and on with this. You know, it started with Lecha Mishnah, and then it went on to Kiddush, and now they have a tefillin. The list is endless. And this is all based on modern psychology and feminism. And I have a story to tell you about a woman who came to Rav Soloveitchik because she wanted to wear a talus. So I'll tell it to you later because... what the Rav had to say to this woman is not politically correct, okay? Because the Rav was a halachist. He wasn't based on... Mendel.
What about, like, daughters?
Again, in Chabad, they're very makpid, both with regard to their Shabbos.
Not Shabbos, but Hanukkah, only the boys would write.
That's a question, because if you tell me that the boys are lighting, yes, and there's no din of Ishto Kigufo with regard to the boys, then the girls should also be lighting. So that I don't understand. Then that you have to go back to, you know, to the original source, probably the Rav Shulchan Aruch. Okay.
There's also Mishnah.
Speak a drop ladder.
You can one also become a partner in lighting
your... Oh, okay. So that's Aksanoi. We'll get to the Sugya Aksanoi a little bit later. Okay. So now we have this machlokas between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos about Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin. Yeah. Oh, this is what I wanted to ask you. I decided I like Beis Shammai. I want to light 8 candles on the first night, 7 on the second. So what would you say about that? You see, the Gemara says in many places that Mishnaso shel Beit Shammai b'mokom beisil lav Mishnah. So for example, the halach is very strict about reciting Kriyat Shema shel Arvis without sitting down. Meaning, if I'm in a sitting position, fine. But let's say I'm standing. For example, Beit Shammai is of the opinion that the Pasuk says, Bishov b'cha uv'kumecha. That means that when I read Kriyat Shema at night, I should be in a sitting position, a lying position. When I read Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharis, I should be in a standing position. Beis Hillel says no. Bishov b'cha means Bizman Shchiva, which means when people are usually resting, that's at night. And Bekumecha means Bishasha B'nei Adam, coming when they get up in the morning, and so forth. So a person says, I am going to stand up for Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharis. This is a more profound case. Obviously, he's trying to fulfill whose opinion? Beit Shammai. Now, normally, it's a very good idea to try to fulfill both opinions. Beis Hillel doesn't reject the possibility of standing and reciting Kriyat Shema. Just he says that's not a requirement. You can read Kriyat Shema in any position whatsoever, because Bekumecha only tells you about the time for Kriyat Shema. So the Gemara says that if a person does like Beit Shammai, again, it's very heavy language, he's chayav misa. He's not allowed to do that, because we passing like Beis Hillel, and Mishnasa Shel Beit Shammai ain't a Mishnah. And this has to do with the case of a sukkah, where he has Rosh over Rubo in the sukkah, and part of his body is outside the sukkah. He's got the shulchan in the sukkah, and his head is outside the sukkah. He's got the shulchan in the sukkah, and his head is in the sukkah, but his body is outside the sukkah. All different kinds of variations, and there's a machlokas Beis Hillel Beit Shammai, and the Gemara says, don't you even dare think about doing like Beit Shammai. Now, I have here the Masifta. The Masifta has access to Sfarim that you and I never heard of. And it's a whole cadre of scholars that I happen to know one of them, although now he jumped ship. He's no longer with Masifta. He moved over to Schottenstein. But anyway, and he tells me that one of the main jobs, if you work on the panel of Masifta, on the staff of Masifta, is that you have to read Sfarim, you have to go to the library, you have to get access to Sfarim. So he quotes a Sefer, I never heard of it, I don't even remember the name of it, we don't have time for me to find it for you, and he says that if somebody decides he wants to do like Beit Shammai and light 8 candles on the first night, that's fine. He holds Kenegi Pariachag, Kenegi Yom HaNichnasim, that's fine. We have a principle that when there's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, we always go like Beis Hillel, and we don't do like Beit Shammai. He says the following: that only applies when the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai is in pure halacha, which means exactly how the Torah or the Chachamim require that I do the mitzvah. But then we have a generic principle called Zekeli V'anveil, from which we derive the principle of what? Heder mitzvah. When it comes to Heder mitzvah, you can debate what would be the expanded and the optimum method of Heder mitzvah. And that's exactly what Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai are arguing about. When it comes to Heder mitzvah, there's no such thing that there's an absolute answer to that question, that the minog ha-mokom or the psak halacha could determine in an absolute way what is the maximum way of doing heder mitzvah. What word or concept in English, Rabbi Osai, does this touch upon, if you accept this approach, that in heder mitzvah there's no uniform standard?
Eclectic.
Eclectic is good. What else? Another couple of words maybe?
Subjective,
excellent. But I really, again, everything you say is, I have one word in mind. I'll give you an example. Every year here in the city of Yerushalayim, they have a contest for the most beautiful sukkah, the most beautiful decorations for the sukkah. Have you ever seen it? And sometimes in Kikar Safra, they demonstrate either in picture or they bring the person themselves to show the sukkah that won that year. It's kedai to see. What word in English, again, I don't know if you'll be able to figure out what I have in my mind, would reflect this concept of let's have a competition. Who can make the most beautiful sukkah? It starts with a C. Creativity. Is there room for creativity in the Torah? Well, certainly in the understanding of the Torah, there's a lot of room for creativity. What we call Elu V'Elu Divrei Kim Chayim. But perhaps even in Halacha there's room for creativity. Where? In Zekei L'Yaveu. Zekei L'Yaveu, creating a Hidur Mitzvah, is a mandate to each and every one of us to be creative. To give your stempel. You know, Chazal say that even though we were created B'Tselem Elokim, each Chosam is different. No two people are exactly alike. Even though you'll see identical twins, the mother will be able to tell the difference. Sometimes even the father, if you're lucky. Everyone is different. Kishem she'ein de'oseim partzufeim shavim kach ein de'oseim shav. Where does that ein de'oseim shav come to the fore in halachic terms? In Hidur Mitzvah. Your Hidur Mitzvah is not my Hidur Mitzvah. Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai are arguing over general guidelines, but there's always an exception to the rule. And if I feel that the Hidur Mitzvah that's appropriate for me is like Beis Hillel, or in this case like Beit Shammai, that's the way I should go. Again, I'm not telling you Halacha L'maaseh. I don't want anyone walking out of here deciding that this Chanukah they're lighting 8 candles. Because you'll get into deep trouble with the authorities. But at least you should know that such an opinion exists. That the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai is in Hidur Mitzvah, and there's never an absolute determining halacha that will uniformly and standardly be machayev every single individual in this kind of context. Here's the room for creativity. Yeah.
How do you ensure that the creativity stays within the bounds?
As long as it's ne'er l'cholecha v'yechad.
No, not just for Hanukkah, but in general, this creativity.
Well, in every mitzvah, you'll have to determine what are the basic nitty-gritty requirements of the mitzvah, what are the critical elements, and beyond that, when you beautify the mitzvah, you go beyond. Again, if you undermine the basic requirements, then there's no debate. But if you maintain the basic requirements, you have three defanos and the shear of sukkah. Now you want to decorate it this way or that way. You want to use certain fruits and organize it this way and certain colors and so forth and so on. You haven't in any way undermined or impinged on the basic requirements. Those you fulfilled. Now it's the sky's the limit. How much you want to be mahadin the mitzvah. It's very much an expression of yourself. Of who you are and what you are, and using your creative abilities. And I think that idea is right here in this Masifta. Yeah, go ahead.
So, if somebody did like Beit Shammai,
according to this opinion, yeah. I'm not saying I'll
start with 8, going down to 1, would he have Mekayim the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah?
Again, that's what we're saying, that Ner Yishu Beiso, even when he gets to the 8th day, according to Beis Shammai, how many candles is he lighting?
One
candle. That's enough for Ner Yishu Beiso. So he certainly has maintained and fulfilled the basic mitzvah. So there's no debate. The whole debate about between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai is beyond the basic mitzvah. Okay.
And what about
Again, if we're saying that the tzibur doesn't determine creativity, but rather the individual determines creativity, then this doesn't come under Hilchos Tzibur. Again, Michael, I don't want you to paskin now la'alocha, because you know this is not a shir in halacha l'maisa. You know, although we will cover halacha l'maisa b'linada, but not in this context. I was so fascinated by this comment of the Masifta, I thought I would mention it. Okay. Where are we up to now? Okay, Amar Rav Yochanan.
Where are you?
Okay, wait, I'll just tell you in a minute where we're up to, as soon as I find the place, okay? Okay, so we're up to Amar Rabba, just 1 second. Amar Rabba Barachana. So let's just, does anybody have an easy way of...
Yeah, the Tosfos Mitzvah go down like 3 lines in Tosfos.
3 lines below Tosfos Mitzvah. Usher, thank you so much. Okay. So the first word in the line is Hillel. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. Amar Rabba, at the end of that line, Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnei Zekenim, Hayu B'Tzidon. Now, Tzidon is a city in the north, probably in what we call today Lebanon, Levanon. And in English, it's called Sidon, I think, if I'm pronouncing that right. Echad Asa Kedivrei Beit Shammai. Now, watch this. This is a generation after Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. The Echad Asa Kedivrei Beis Hillel. Zeno Saint Tam Lidvarov, Shukeneged Priachag, the Zeno Saint Tam Lidvarov, the Milan Bekodesh, Vie Morid. You remember the second Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that the whole machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai revolves around whether we should apply the principle of Milan Bekodesh, Vie Morid to the case of Ner Chanukah. Beit Shammai says there's an overriding reason why Chanukah should be the exception to the rule, and that's called Keneged Pare Hacha. Why did the Gemara have to tell me this story, Rabbi Yossi? Who cares? I mean, like, you know,
tells
give
us
it a
both
break.
Opinions are valid.
Exactly. The fact that there were two Zkenim, one followed the recommendation of Beis Hillel, the other followed the recommendation of Beit Shammai, one said Milah B'Kodesh, the other said Parachak, it indicates that there's no final Psak Halach in this case. Why not? All over Shas, we have Machlokas, Shin Beis Hillel, Beit Shammai, we pass it like Beis Hillel. All of a sudden, the Gemara tells us there were two Zkenim. The answer is what we said before. That there's no final psak halacha when it comes to Hidur mitzvah. If both Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai agree that the basic mitzvah you fulfilled, there was never a day of Hanukkah where you left out a single candle, so you always had a minimum of one candle, then the machlokas is about Hidur mitzvah. If there's machlokas about Hidur mitzvah, then make yourself a choice decision. And one Zaken came to the opinion that Beit Shammai is correct, I'm going to follow him, and the other, like Beis Hillel. Turn around one.
And each one can decide for himself.
Again, that's what I said in the name of the Masifta. I'm not saying that everybody agrees to that. I just wanted you to be aware of that.
And it wasn't random. They gave their reason.
Correct. So it's and we're talking about Zkenim. You know, why did the Gemara have to tell me this story? Obviously, the Gemara wants to tell you that the general rule of Beis Shammai, of Beis Shammai and of Mishnah, doesn't apply. And why not? Because we're dealing with Hidur. Toner Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa. Ner Chanukah Mitzvah Lehanicha al Pesach Beso mi bachutz. So let's just translate this Gemara literally, and then we'll see how Rashi and Tosfos fight about this Gemara. What does the Gemara have in mind? Now the concept of mi bachutz is obviously related to what dimension of Ner Chanukah, Persumei Nisan. And Rashi is going to point this out straight off the bat. Now, if our intention in Ner Chanukah is to achieve Persumei Nes, then what kind of Persumei Nes do we want? Minimum or maximum? What's the obvious answer?
Maximum.
Let's maximize Persumei Nes. Hence, Mibachutz. Because once it's Mibachutz, it's no longer limited to the Anshei Abayis, but we're reaching out and we're publicizing the miracle out in the public. And Rav Soloveitchik, I mentioned to you last week, was of the opinion that Pirsum HaNes belongs to what mitzvah? Who remembers our discussion? I hope you haven't forgotten. Now I'm in trouble. To Kiddush Hashem. Does anybody remember that? That's why he made such a big deal about Rashi's definition of Tarmidoy, that Tarmidoy is Shem Uma, that even for the guy of this Kiddush Hashem, fine. But we're not going to go over that again.
Why doesn't it say Bachutz, not Mibachutz?
Oh, so Jerry is saying it should have said not Mibachutz, it should say Bachutz. What's Mibachutz? What's the extra mem?
The onlooker.
Okay, maybe it means the onlooker, but I don't know how to fit that into the extra mem right now. Okay. So, Bosai, before we read Rashi, because sometimes if you analyze the Gemara without Rashi, you appreciate Rashi to a greater extent. If our goal, Mibachutz, is to maximize Pirsum HaNes, then what would you say about the following possibility? I have a house, and I have two options as to where I can light the candle. Both options are mibachutz. They're both outside my house. But here's the deal. We have a common courtyard that's shared by many different batim. So you live here, and he lives here, and I live here, and we're all around in a circle. Now, if somebody from the outside, and of course, even if I live in one of these batim, I'm coming in from the outside. So that is what we would call Pesach HaChotzer. Again, I'm not good at drawing pictures, but there are two possibilities here, right? Because these are all the batim, and then you enter into the Chotzer from here. So this is the Pesach. This is the Pesach HaChotzer, and this is the Pesach HaBayis. Now, you enter into my house over here, that's called Pesach HaBayis. You enter into the Chotzer from here. When you enter into the Chotzer, this Chotzer is related to how many different people? Or how many different batim, for that matter?
All
of them, correct? It's multiple. In a certain sense, this is going to expand my personas. And for two reasons. Reason number one is because now this candle sort of represents the entire chutz, meaning all the batim in the chutz. But more than that, how many people are going to see this net? Everyone. And not only the people who live within this entire chutz, but even guests or visitors. You know, you have to sign in to the visitors thing, and you know, and the security guard is going to ask you for some proof, or maybe you'll have to punch in a code. You know, did they give you the code? But anyone who's coming into this area is going to see this candle. But within the chatzar itself, this candle is only doing a pirsum, A, related to the members of this household, and B, for those people who are going in, theoretically. Again, everything could change depending upon the mitzvahs, but my mitzvahs that I'm describing to you is where, you know, the Pesach here, this threshold is visible to those who are coming into this month. So you've really minimized the number of people who are going to see the candle. And if our principle of Pirsum HaNes is to maximize, then Mibachutz doesn't really answer the question. Now you might say, well, we live in a society, in a residential area where there are private homes. But that's not what it was back in the day. Back in the day, this is exactly how they lived. I mean, there's sugyas all over Shas. Whether you start with Masechta Erevin, here in Masechta Shabbos, all over the place.
It doesn't say
Chotz. Oh, wait a second. Wait, just one second. I just want to get the conceptual question here. So Rashi is going to build a lot on the word beso, but this is going to be a problematic Rashi for us, and Tosfos is going to jump on this one. So before we get to the diukim, what I want you to understand is what's at stake here. For example, how many people in this room, I'm just taking a census, live in an apartment building? Wow, I think this was a unanimous decision. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's certainly in Yerushalayim, to own a private house is rare. And if you know anyone, you know, let me know who he is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I want to rub shoulders with him. Right. But most of us live in apartment buildings. So for example, the apartment building that I live in Har Nof has 16 families. Five of which speak Spanish, by the way. Anyway, so I'm trying to learn Spanish. Interesting. So we have 16 families, correct? Now, my apartment is in the basement. It's actually called minus two. It's below, because Har Nof is built on a mountain, and our apartment is on the lower part of the mountain.
Charles.
Now, the only way you're going to see my candle, if I'm lighting like Rashi, Pesach Beso, and he's taking Beso literally, is if you have to go down two flights of steps with minus two in the elevator, and then you'll see my candle. So my neighbor, his name is Rabbi Rottenberg, he's a big Talmud Chacham, he lights his Hanukkah candles outside the apartment building. Meaning, when you walk into the apartment building, there's a common area, and that common area is where he lights the Hanukkah candles. There's a great plus, but there's also a great minus. What's the great plus?
Everybody's
going to see it. Anyone who goes into 16 shuls will see Rabbi Rottenberg's, Ner Chanukah. That really expands Pirsum HaNes. But there's also a minus here. What's the minus? It's not base. Whose Ner Chanukah is it? And we saw already in the Sugya Mahadran that we want the Ner to reflect the people in the house. First, we saw it in the fact that Ner L'Cholecha V'Echad. And that was the Hidur Mitzvah, that the Neros reflect the number of people in the household. Secondly, we're going to concern ourselves, as we said before, Ner Ishu Beso, with the people who are inside the house. Okay. So says Rashi, let's take a look at Rashi. He says, Mibachutz, Mishum Pursume Nisa. Says Rashi, you know what Mibachutz means? Lo Birshus HaRabim, not in an area that's accessible to the public, Ela Bechatzera, on his private chatzer. In other words, Bateim Hayu Psukim L'chatzer, you had a whole bunch of homes inside a larger courtyard, and each one of those homes had in front of it his own private little chatzer. And Rashi wants you to light me Pesach Beso B'chutz, meaning right outside your Pesach, opening the door to your home, in the area that specifically is yours. And you own that chatzer. Mainly you're lighting in an area that's clearly related to you, because no one else has the right to light in that chatzer. If you were to light on the entrance into the Rishus HaRabim, into the entire chatzah that has many batim, that would be Rishus HaRabim. You have no right to use that area more than anyone else. Everyone has equal right. It doesn't become Beso. It's not Pesach Beso Mibachutz. Now let's take a look at Tosus. Tosus Mitzvah La'nicha Al Pesach Beso Mibachutz. Says Tosus, Umairi Deleka chatzer elabais haomed somach l'shus harav. Tosus says you have to rewrite the script of the Gemara. It's not the way Rashi has it. It's not a whole bunch of batim. Each one has his own little private yard, his own chatzer in front of his bais, and then there's a rishus harav on the outside. No, we're talking about a metzias, says Tosus, where his house borders on rishus harav. It's like a residential area with a private hall. And therefore, he's going to achieve a Pirsum HaNes for the Rishus HaRabim by putting the candle in front of his house. But the key of keys here, according to Tosus, is Rishus HaRabim. We want to get a Ner Chanukah that's exposed to Rishus HaRabim. Aval, now he refers to Rashi's Metzius. Im Yesh Chatzel Lifnei Abayis. In other words, each person has his own chatzer in front of his bayis. Then, says Tosus, mitzvah laniach al pesach chatzer, meaning the common chatzer that is Rishus HaRabim for all the batim. In other words, whereas Rashi puts the emphasis on connecting his private chatzer to the bayis, and that's where the Ner Chanukah should be, Tosus puts the emphasis on Rishus HaRabim. So why does the Brisa say that mitzvah lanicha al pesach beso mi bachutz, implying in his private chatzer in front? No, says Tosus. We're talking about a case where what's in front of his bias, what is the chutz? Rishus HaRabim. And that's the key of keys. That's the goal of Tosus. Now look how Tosus proves his sheet. The Amar Lekamon, the Gemara is going to say later on, chatzer sheyesh lo shtei p'tachim, Tzricha Shtei Neros. Okay, now we're talking about the following scenario. You've got a house, and it's got two entrances. One entrance is from 6th Avenue, and the other entrance is from 5th Avenue. And the Gemara says that now you have to light on both. Again, the big machlok is supposed to be if you make a bracha on each one. But let's assume, like the Pri Chodosh, that you have to make a bracha on each one. Okay, he makes one bracha on one Pesach and one on the other. So what does that have to do with Tosfos? If your goal is only Pirsum HaNes vis-a-vis the bias, So why not achieve Pirsim HaNes with one Ner Chanukah that's connected to one, let's choose your avenue, 6th or 5th. But if the entire Pirsim HaNes is dependent upon Rosh Hashanah Rabin, you could have one bias but two Rosh Hashanah Rabins. You've got one bias that is situated on the Rosh Hashanah Rabin of 5th Avenue, you have another, and you have that same bias is situated on Rosh Hashanah Rabin on 5th Avenue. And therefore each avenue requires its own Ner. So Tosfos says, you see that the criterion, the critical element that determines Ner Chanukah is Rishus HaRab. That's his first proof. He says, V'Amrina Nami, and further, the Gemara is going to tell us that Ner Sheyeshla Shnei Pios, Ole L'Shnei Bnei Adam. So you have and it's very confusing here to us because we translate the word ner as a candle. That's a very big mistake if you're learning Shas. Ner is the receptacle that holds the oil. He's got two different wicks in one ner, in one receptacle. So the oil is feeding two different wicks. And he separates the wicks by a pet. You've seen it, you know, in the museums, you'll see or in the pictures, you see the archaeological digs where they have different sections in one receptacle, different openings, and each opening has its own wick. So now Reuven lit a wick on the northern side of this receptacle and Shimon on the southern side. And the Gemara establishes, Olu l'shnei b'nei Adam, Reuven fulfilled his mitzvah and Shimon fulfilled his mitzvah. What does this have to do with the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos as to whether or not the Ner should be lit in his bias, meaning is somehow connected to his bias, or at Rosh Hashanah Rabbah? Says Tosfos, Mashma, L'shnei Batim. There are two houses that are contiguous. One is right near the other. And he's going to place the candles in one Ner, but one Ner is on the northern side for the house that's on the north, and one on the southern side. Why is that a problem for Rashi? Rashi requires what? That each bias has a Ner that's directly related to that bias. According to Tosfos, just put the Ner in Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Do I know which bias is connected to? I don't have to know that. But according to Rashi, you have to know, it's got to be clear that it's connected to one particular bias. In this case, you've got a Ner that's hovering, so to speak, between two batim, and you have no clue which bias it's going to. And therefore he says, V'amrina nami ner sheyesh bo shtei pios ola l'shnei b'nei adam mashma l'shnei batim. Well, which bias is this related to? Rashi's going to have to say that it's related to both batim, because one is a little bit tilted towards this bias, connected, proximate to this, and the other to that. But Tosfos fundamentally says that everything depends upon Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Now, I'm not sure, according to Tosfos, that there is actually a status of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah between these two batim, that there's an alleyway. But what Tosfos means is that anyone could see these candles. He has no clue which candle belongs to which bias, but that doesn't matter. As long as each bias lit a candle in a way that's accessible or noticeable to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, that itself is a fulfillment. Now Tosfos has a very fundamental technical problem over here. According to Rashi, the Ner Chanukah has to be in the entrance way to your house, correct? It's got to be right outside your door. Now we have a problem. Because the Gemara is going to establish that which side of the door does the Chanukah have to have? You have a right side and a left side. And the halacha is that the mezuzah has to be on the right side and the Ner Chanukah has to be on the left side. So that's called Zem Yamin v'Zem Yismol. Now, if there are two houses that are contiguous one to the other, and the requirement, according to Rashi's definition, is that the Ner has to be in Pesach Beso, then it's got to be on the left side of Pesach Beso. And if there's one Ner, then where is that Ner? Is it on the left side or the right side? It might be on the left side for Reuven, but it'd be on the right side for Shimon. Because again, the Ner hasn't moved. It's stationary. So if you have two Batim and a Ner in between with two Pios, then one Peh vis-a-vis the house on the right is going to be on the left side. That's fine. But the other Peh vis-a-vis the house on the left side is going to be on his right side. And the mezuzah has to be on the right side. So how can it be Ola L'Shnei B'nei Adam? Only one of the two will have it on his left side. Is the Abel, but now Tosis answers this question according to his own opinion. So we're no longer talking about Pesach Abayis, but Pesach HaChotzer, which is the common area to many people. And therefore, that is the area for all the batim that share that Chotzer. And there's always going to be one right side and one left side. So the Shtei Pios of this Ner are both in an air that's on the left side. So if it's on the left side of the Pesach HaChotzer, then anybody who's shayach to that Chotzer, according to Tosis, he participates, so to speak, in the public area, will fulfill his mitzvah. And this machlok between Rashi and Tosis is so relevant here in Eretz Yisrael. For example, here across the street there's something called the Dan complex. You know what I'm talking about? And there's so many different houses that share one courtyard. Tosis would want to find, locate, pinpoint that area which is most common, which is most accessible to most people, and that's where everybody should be lighting their candles. Again, I don't know technically how you're going to do it, because you know, are you going to pile the, you know, make shelves? Are you going to have one candelabra next to the other? You know, that has to be addressed. But according to Rashi, the whole question is a moot question, because I'm going to light my candles right outside my door. Now, what happens if I live on the second floor? And according to Rashi, I have to light my candle right outside my door. It's not on the ground floor. So that's the next line in the Gemara. Okay, we have to stop. The imayadar ba'aliyah, but if he lives in the attic way, now there's a problem. Why? Because that Pesach Chotzer, which is the Pesach Habayis according to Rashi, is only accessible to the neighbor on the bottom. So in order to get up to the top, you have to go through his Pesach. So you never have really your own Pesach. So menicha b'chalon. In that case, Rashi says the fallback position is Rishus HaRabin. What's going to be Rishus HaRabin? But again, Rashi always insists that it has to be related to his house. It's called Chalon HaSavuch L'Rishus HaRabin. So we need it tomorrow. We'll pick up the sugya of Chalon, lighting the candles in your window, which is a window that's accessible to and can be seen by Rishus HaRabin. Okay then?
What happens to the front and back of the house?
Oh, so if you have a front of a house that borders on one avenue or one street, and you have the back of the house that's on another street, you're going to have to light on both in both places. The question is going to be whether you make a bracha in both places.